My name is Gertrude Smith. I'm running for mayor of Seaside. I'm a young person who is excited to represent young people in a young city. Not just young people, but everyone. And I'm also the daughter of a formerly incarcerated man, as well as a veteran. And the thing that I'm concerned about is, what are you all going to do to increase visibility for other than honorable veteran discharge benefits for their families? Because that's an issue that I've been faced with a lot as the daughter of an other than honorable discharged veteran. And also,
I'm going to stop you there, and that's a great question. What do you do for veterans who are other than honorably discharged?
Well, I think it's an issue where you make sure that they have the benefits that not just the military affords them, but that the government affords them, okay? You know, you would hope that there would be something through the VA, but more importantly, he still is open to receiving the other sorts of benefits that our U.S. government and the state government and the county government provides them and their family members, and that's what I would recommend.
Casey?
There's a program called the Veterans Retraining Assistance Program. It used to be funded at the federal level. It was recently cut, and I think it's particularly important that we reinstate funding for that program and make sure that that our veterans, all discharged veterans, receive job training and transition assistance, because we focus a lot on the health needs of our veterans, but a lot of them simply need help transitioning back into civil society, and that bill would provide funding to do that.
So I see the two of you sitting here with an enormous amount of qualifications. I was wondering if either
will
one
you lean in very close to
lean
the
lean in very closely. Okay. Well, it's way too tall. So I was wondering if either one of you would support a bill that would make it mandatory for a presidential candidate to have qualifications to become president. I know everyone in here could become a president, but we all could become a doctor, but we have to go to college, we have to learn, we have to educate ourselves. Would you make it mandatory to have a code of ethics and qualifications to become president? Move up the ladder.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. In fact, I happen to believe that anyone running for president should serve in the military. And the reason I believe that is because the president is the commander in chief of the U.S. military. And many of our presidents have never served in the U.S. military, and yet they're making vital decisions on behalf of young people that are being put in harm's way. Beyond that, obviously, the educational and experiential qualifications are also important. I mean, one of the reasons I'm fond of Gary Johnson is because he actually has served as governor. He has served in an executive position. The other two candidates have not. He's actually balanced a budget and passed a state budget. He has actually dealt with border control right on his border in New Mexico. And so I like to look at a person's record of success. Hillary Clinton, who my opponent is supporting, obviously I don't need to go through the long list of baggage that she's bringing to this, but her reign as Secretary of State has also been defined by sending in special operations troops and drone strikes, which I don't support. I think we need to have a comprehensive strategy. And when you have somebody who's not qualified to be president, you don't get a comprehensive strategy.
Well, I was kind of thinking of along the lines of moving from senator to congressman to president, as opposed to
being a governor. Sure.
Yeah.
But I would disagree. Look, I think that you being in the military is an invaluable experience, and yes, you learn a tremendous amount. But unfortunately, in this country, 1% have served, just 1%. And so you're really limiting the pool of applicants and people who are qualified to be in that position. In regards to qualifications, there's a number of things you can always obviously talk about. And sure, there should be some sort of qualifications that people should have. But I like your first thing, that code of ethics. That's what it comes down to. It comes down to who are you and what type of negative campaigning are you going to do? And that's something that we need to get rid of in politics at the national level and at the local level.
Well, I'm
going to invite the next person up for a question.
Thank you. The Monterey Bay is obviously a protected sanctuary. Back 30 days ago, we had a fire, still going on, Sobrina's fire, And because it's a protected bay, it's my understanding we did not allow helicopters to go and take water out of billions of gallons of an ocean that could have put the fire out sooner. And just wondering if I'm out of whack there, I appreciate it. But if there's something that could be done in an emergency, I think the people that lost their homes may want to have the helicopters going in the ocean when it was close by the ocean. Thank you.
Yeah. No, that is wrong. They were actually going into the ocean, down in Big Sur especially, and taking water out and using it to fight that fire.
Do you want to add anything, Casey, on that point? Okay.
Hi there. Next month, the military is going to have a very good month. On the 11th, we're going to open the cemetery, and on the 14th, we got the DOD-VA clinic that's going to open up. It's going to be fabulous. We've needed it. I'd like to know what... Thank you. I'd like to know what each of you has done to contribute to make this happen.
Let's start with Casey on this one.
Sure. Well, thank you, Dan. That doesn't sound like a loaded question at all, considering how much my opponent has contributed in these areas, and I absolutely give him credit and applaud his contributions to the cemetery and the clinic and also the VA courts, which are particularly important. As a future representative in Congress, what we really need to focus on is fixing the VA system. I mean, we can build a local cemetery, we can build a local clinic, which is not a VA hospital, by the way, it's a clinic, so we still have room for improvement, and we can offer a veterans court. But it doesn't fix the larger problems within the VA, and that's where we really need reform. And I believe that reform has to focus on, as I suggested before, job training, transition assistance, educational opportunities, mental health services, and physical health services. And right now, we have this large umbrella, very expensive, very cumbersome organization that isn't meeting the needs of our veterans.
Thanks, Danny, and thank you. I appreciate your acknowledgement that I actually have done something and do have qualifications, unlike a recent ad I saw. I know that when you take the uniform off, you should be still be serving those who served us. And that's why I stepped up. That's why I wanted to be a part of something as great as the Central Coast Veterans Cemetery, work with people like Dan and Tom Mancini and the veterans who had listened to this project for over 20 years, but nothing was getting done. And fortunately, you had the leadership of Congressman Sam Farr, a Democrat, Senator William Monning, another Democrat, Mayor Jason Burnett, another Democrat, and myself, another Democrat, who stepped up and got this done. And I was honored to be a part of it. I'll be honored to be there on October 11th at the Central Coast Veterans Cemetery for that hard opening. And that's what it's about. It's about making sure that we continue to step up. It's not just having a ballot designation as to whether or not you're a veteran. It's about actually serving and giving back and doing something. And that's what I've proven I've done in the past. And that's what I look forward to doing as a US Congressman, making sure that our veterans continue to get the service they deserve.
Sarah, if I could, I think we need to address the question of qualifications, because twice Jimmy has brought up the ad and I have not rebutted at all. But I think
it is important
to actually talk about what our qualifications are, because I stand by everything that is in that ad. In fact, I believe completely that if this were Jimmy Williams sitting here, he wouldn't be sitting here. He's sitting here because his name is Jimmy Panetta. And I'll tell you, I have been told over and over and over again that I'm a great candidate, I know the issues, you know, I'll really represent this district, being open-minded and not partisan, but this is locked up for Jimmy. That's what I'm told over and over and over again. And you know what my response is every time? I smile and I say, no, this can't be locked up for Jimmy. We live in a democracy. We live in a country where anyone can run for office, and you get to choose who your representative is. This isn't about political connections. This isn't about what your father accomplished or the stories that you can tell from 30 or 40 years ago. This is about what you have done and what you will do. And when you look at my background, when you look at the qualifications that I bring to this seat, I will make the argument today and every day that I am more qualified than my opponent for this seat. And I ask for your vote because this isn't about Jimmy or me. This is about what we stand for as a nation. And I believe what we stand for as a nation is opportunity for everyone. And when we get to the place in this nation where only people with a famous last name and people with a lot of money and people with political connections can be successful, that's a sad day. That's not what I fought for in the military, and it's not what a lot of you fought for in the military.
It's absolutely. Hold on. Look, It's absolutely offensive to think that the 70% of the electorate that voted for me in the June primary voted for me because of my name. This is one of the most educated electorates around. They did not vote for me because of my name. They voted for me because, not because of Panetta, but because of Jimmy. And let me tell you, in my household, they always told us, it's not about your last name, it's about your first name. Don't get me wrong, I'm proud of the public service that my mother, my father, my uncle, my cousins who are police officers, and school teachers, and my brothers, all that they've contributed to this area. You bet I'm proud of that. And if that's all I had, I'd be damn proud of that. But I learned it's more than that. And I learned that in my professional experience. Because let me tell you, when I was in Afghanistan, talking to Navy SEALs, directing them on their next mission night after night after night, they could give a crap about my last name. When I had to go into East Oakland as a prosecutor to try to get a woman to come testify for me about a murder that took place right outside her apartment, she could give a crap about my last name. And Maria Alcantar, the mother of Azael Cruz, a six-year-old that was shot and killed in a drive-by shooting, the last case I tried, when she came up and hugged me at the end of that case, when we obtained a guilty verdict, she wasn't hugging me because of her last name, because of my last name. She was hugging me because I brought her justice, because I brought her a sense of what this community is about, a sense of what I feel public service about. And that's making sure you serve everybody. You've heard about my work with veterans. You've heard about my work with nonprofits. You've heard about my work as a prosecutor from East Oakland to East Salinas on the gang team for the past 5.5 years. That's what this job is about. It's about service. I've done that. I've proven that. I have not rested on that name. I have not rested on the 70% of the electorate vote that we got in the June primary. And we're not gonna rest in November. I've been out to every corner of this district. I've met everybody in this district, it feels like. And let me tell you, they appreciate getting to know me and not just my last name.
Thank you both for that. This ad has stirred up a lot of controversy. I haven't even seen the ad yet, but I'm going to go home and watch it. Next question, please.
Yes. My name is Sean Edwards, and I have only one question, and it's directed towards Mrs. Lucius. Will you, if elected to office, sign the Norquist Pledge, which is the anti-tax pledge?
No.
Thank you.
I have a very simplistic question. And I am a retired teacher, so I'm hoping that you will give me a very short, very concise, only your history answer. Both of you in your ads say that you are naval intelligence. I would like to know exactly what you did in naval intelligence, where you did it, for how long, and how you have used that naval intelligence since you've gotten out of the Navy. Short, please.
All right, let's start with Jimmy on that one.
And may I add, I have heard nothing but negative responses tonight. So please just give your own history t- to my answer. But I'm just asking.
Of course, ma'am. Thank you for that question. I was 33 years old, and I wanted to sign up. And I signed up as a reserve intelligence officer. Come 2007, I was mobilized and deployed. In 2003 to 2007, I was with the Joint Intelligence Command Pacific. I was with Commander Pacific Fleet. I did a number of exercises from Hawaii to Korea, from San Diego, all throughout the Pacific. Then I was mobilized and deployed with the Joint Special Operations Command as an intelligence officer, assisting special forces, in particular Navy SEALs, in their mission night after night after night. And I have used that experience to understand exactly the type of strategy that we've employed in the Middle East to this day, and what we're seeing in fighting ISIS. And that's helped me understand what's going on and why we don't need 20,000 boots on the ground.
Casey.
Well, that didn't quite answer my question, yes. But that's okay. Casey? Yeah.
So I spent 7 years on active duty. I actually joined the Navy when I was 22 and became an intelligence officer. My first assignment was on an aircraft carrier out of San Diego, and I spent 2 years on an aircraft carrier. We did deploy to the Persian Gulf. We were involved in enforcing UN sanctions against Iraq. That was before September 11th. It was in 1999, and it was actually an effort so that we could prevent the use of military force and prevent combat, and it worked at that time. And then I was sent to the Naval Postgraduate School, where I was able to get a master's degree in national security affairs, and also met my husband here in Monterey, and we decided to make this our home. And my final assignment was at the Pacific Fleet headquarters in Hawaii, where I was engaged as a intelligence liaison between our Navy and the Pacific Fleet and the navies of Singapore, South Korea, Thailand, and Japan. And what I learned from all of that is how important our partnerships are and how important our diplomatic efforts are. Because what my experience on 7 years of active duty was not about conflict and combat. It was really about how do we use diplomacy to strengthen, to train, and to equip our allies. And then I proceeded to get a PhD and teach military officers over at the Naval Postgraduate School for about 7 years, teaching national security decision making, which I believe is an essentially important topic right now for our nation.
All right, we've got time for one more question, if it's a short question.
I'm sure you're both want to go back there and do a great job. Referring to 60 Minutes about 6 months ago, it came about that in the case of Republicans, you're going to spend 30 hours a week fundraising, and in the case of Democrats, it's only a little bit less than that. What do you plan to do and handle that, or say to your parties, that's not my responsibility, I want to serve my people?
Casey, why don't we start with you? Let's be brief and then we'll wrap up.
Yes. So, that 60 Minutes episode and the idea that you spend so much time every week fundraising is completely disheartening. In fact, I have not received money from the Republican Party. I hope my opponent will talk about how much money he has gotten from Washington, D.C. and from PACs. I have not. I've been raising money here locally. And as a result of that, I don't feel beholden to my party. I don't feel beholden to agencies and organizations in Washington, D.C. So as a result, I will be able to go and really focus on passing legislation that will help this district and not focus on fundraising and keeping promises to people who have given me money in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. No, look, I think my opponent is correct in the sense that we don't go back there to raise money. We go back to get something done. Unfortunately, we're dealing with a Republican leadership that hasn't got anything done. And so it takes people who are willing to go back there, and that's right, basically reach across the aisle. Now, I have not received any money from the Democratic National Committee. They have not given me a cent, okay? In fact, I have received over 1,000 donations from individuals, people who have stepped up and actually supported me and supported my campaign. And I'm honored. I am so honored, not just by the number, but by the diversity of people who have given to my campaign. Farmers, farm workers, fishermen, environmentalists, police officers, you name it. People have stepped up and given to my campaign because they know me. They support me, and I'm honored by that. And when I go back to the DC, nothing will prevent me from serving the people of this district. That's the job. That's the number one goal. That's why I'm in front of you. That's why I stand here honored, and I thank you. I appreciate all of your support, and I ask for your vote in November. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Casey. Good luck to both of you. Have fun on the campaign trail, if you can. And everybody, please vote November 8th. You can still register to vote. Read the weekly. And we'll be back here, just so you know, October 10th with four candidates for Seaside Mayor, if you want to come do this again with us.